This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is the Subway to Shea podcast. Anthony Rivera here with you talking about all the news and happenings surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets. Episode 121 from the Subway to Shea studios in my office. And before we bring our guest on this week's show, I got to thank last week's guests, Keith and Key of the Shea and Sons podcast. Make sure you're following them and subscribing to their YouTube page and following them on Twitter with their great insight as well. We had a blast not only bringing this episode to you, but doing it live last week. It was a lot of fun. It was the first live one, and I'm so happy to be doing it again. I received a lot of great responses following the episode, and the Shea Bros will be back on again soon. Make sure to subscribe, like I said, to their YouTube channel and subscribe to their podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Now, with Shohei Ohtani officially off the board, with that record-breaking and, may I say, ridiculous 10-year, $700 million contract, which we got a little bit more ridiculous news into that. All eyes are on Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and here to help me out with the Yamamoto Watch, breaking it all down, is the host of the Simply Amazing podcast alongside Tarim Sharma and the creator and writer for The Apple on Substack. It's Tim Ryder. Tim, welcome back to the Subway to Shea podcast, my friend.
What's up, Ant? Thanks for having me, buddy.
I'm doing well. It was so great to see you out there. It was the first time we met actually in person at the Queens Baseball Convention, doing that panel with Mark Healy for the State of the Mets. That was a lot of fun. You know, you were the third guest in the history of the Subway to Shea podcast way back when we started. I can't believe we haven't done this more often, but I'm happy to have you on now, and we are going to get that dialogue moving. It's been a long time, man. Too long.
Absolutely. And yeah, man, look at the heights that you've reached since episode number three. it's impressive. I love to see it. Just people with like honest, good content moving ahead in the world. I love to see it, man. And all the congratulations to everything you've done, all the work you put into it. It's impressive.
I appreciate you so much. Definitely one of the content creators I look up to, especially since coming into being one. You with your Simply Amazing podcast, with writing for The Apple for Substack. I really appreciate you coming on and, you know, helping me along the way as well. Let's get right into this. Before we get into Yamamoto, I want to quickly address the whole Shohei Ohtani saga with you. And, you know, he got that 10-year, $700 million contract. But now we're seeing all these deferred payments, and these Dodgers have really set themselves up to quite possibly being the leaders. Let's be fair. You know, the Mets were said to be one of the leaders because Cohen and his money. The Yankees were said to be a leader because of, you know, the aura and the mystique around the Yankee organization. But now you look at the LA Dodgers with all those deferred payments, and I think Ohtani's going to be making only $2 million a year, and they will try to bring in, I don't know if that's correct. I may have said that wrong, but I feel like it is $2 million a year from everything that I've read, with everything being deferred on the back end. The Dodgers quite possibly could be the leaders now in the clubhouse for Yamamoto.
Well, what we've heard about Yamamoto so far is that, you know, he's certainly weighing his options. We've heard reports that he wants to play with another Japanese player, and what better Japanese player would there be to play with than Ohtani? As far as Ohtani's deferred money and what that means for the Dodgers. All right. So on the books, he'll be making $2 million a year. He's deferring $680 million of his $700 million contract against the competitive balance tax, or the luxury tax. I think the Dodgers are going to show a $46 million salary for him on a yearly basis. Don't ask me how that works. I'm not things. Just reading reports. I know on Simply Amazing this morning, I pointed to John Becker. I pointed to Chris Soto. Of course, you know, the big journalists out there, but the independent guys, you know, they really had a finger on this pulse early. They knew that if money was going to be deferred, and big money, as we kind of knew from the start, it would affect, you know, the Dodgers luxury tax payroll. And now that they've got that down to almost unprecedented levels, oh, they can absolutely add another superstar, possibly two. So yeah, if Yamamoto, I think it's just all going to come down to him. If he wants to go to the Dodgers, they certainly have the financial flexibility, I mean, with or without Ohtani, to do that. They're one of the more, you know, cash-laden franchises in pro sports. The Mets, I'm almost surprised that they haven't been making more waves. And I keep on saying, oh, Stearns has a plan. And I don't want to put all their eggs into Yamamoto's basket, as beneficial as him coming on board would be. But in the same breath, you don't want to miss the boat, and you don't want to fall out of favor with the fan base, and you don't want to kind of throw away all that goodwill that you built up over the last couple of years, the whole Uncle Steve narrative and, oh, the Mets are doing it right. And I'm not saying that they're not, but, you know, narratives go a long way. And if you have some of the fan base and some of the louder voices in the fan base and some of the talking heads out there, you know, poo-pooing, oh, the Mets didn't get Ohtani. Oh, the Mets, maybe they didn't get Yamamoto. They didn't push for Soto. You know, I'm not sold on the idea that they don't have a plan, but the more things are unfolding, I think Yamamoto should be a very important part of at least their immediate future in the hot stove.
Grant's put the number up here on the chat, so I'm going to throw that up here. $2 million from 2023 to 2033, $68 million from 2034 to 2043. Thank you for putting those up, Grant. Appreciate that. And if you want to chime in on the chat, you got questions, anything, put it up there. We'll do our best to get to them tonight. A lot of what we're going to talk about tonight is going to come from some of the articles that were written by Will Salmon of The Athletic. And, you know, he talked about the whole situation and what Cohen had said in that article, never really having Ohtani's agent reach out to him personally. And he thought that that was telling. What did you make of Cohen's comments from that article? And, you know, just Ohtani's really lack of interest to want to come to New York.
Well, I don't necessarily think that reflects poorly on the Mets. I think Ohtani had I don't want to say his mind made up, because nobody knows what his decisions were going into this or where his head was going into this. But, you know, you almost get the feeling that the Mets could have thrown the same contract at him and he still would have went to LA. And that's fine. That's the player's prerogative. Ohtani's camp not reaching out to the Mets or not really putting the Mets at the forefront, you know, that's one way to look at it. And I could appreciate Steve Cohen's point of view on that. It's like, well, you know, I think that says a lot. And I'm sure it does to an extent. I think if the Mets wanted to make their presence known, they could have also done that. But, you know, maybe a guy like Ohtani and that type of financial commitment wasn't in the Mets' plans, wasn't in what they had in mind for what this organization is going to be built into. You know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, considering he is the unicorn and he's the greatest ball player we're probably ever going to see. But yeah, I guess in the same breath, you have to kind of almost trust their process, or at least hope that you trust their process. But yeah, you have to wonder how Mets brass internally is feeling right now, or might be feeling if Yamamoto falls off the board.
Yeah, it's going to be a very tough thing that they're going to have to go through, not only with, you know, the media in New York, but the fan base as well. I mean, especially after seeing Soto get traded to the Yankees, the goodwill that Cohen has or had, and the same thing going on with David Stearns, who's only been here for a month, that kind of dissipates a lot. And you know, I'm one of the more patient fans. I know you are too. You're a very optimistic fan. I've seen it on Twitter. There are a lot of Met fans who aren't not like that. And, you know, they're frustrated, and they're rightfully so. They have every right to feel the way that they want to feel and have the opinions that they want to have. So with that said, striking out on, you know, Yamamoto is definitely going to set them back. And, you know, we look at it, like I said at the start, you know, with Ohtani off the board, we are officially on Yamamoto watch. The today it was, I think, the Yankees and the Giants who had spoke to him. I think he's out there in LA right now. He was always going to be the more realistic option for the Mets. They need starting pitching. He's at the top of their list. He is the guy. That's who the Mets want. There's no doubt about it. There has been all the talk over the media and baseball about the Mets wanting Yamamoto. He's the number one free agent they covet. And, you know, Tim, last week, Will Salmon also wrote an article during the winter meetings about Cohen and David Stearns flying to Japan to visit Yamamoto. And I thought that was a pretty big deal. A lot of contention on X following that news that, you know, Cohen was desperate and was making a last minute plea to try to convince Yamamoto to sign with the Mets. I tend to think that he was doing his due diligence. And if you want someone that bad, you will do whatever it takes to sign them. So that means going out there at whatever hours of the morning, trying to get to Yamamoto and get a meeting with him, take him out to lunch, dinner, whatever it is, you know, the whole courting process of bringing Yamamoto to Queens, you got to do it, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a 14-hour flight that has to be taken. You know, I think even before Ohtani signed, I think everyone knew that there were going to be a lot of deep-pocketed suitors for Yamamoto, and the Mets making the effort and going out to him before he's doing his U.S. tour. You know, I'm pretty sure they made their adoration known and probably, you know, let the player know, hey, whatever offers you might get, please circle back to us. That's how much we want you on board. As a fan, I hope the Mets did that. And, you know, if they're going to prioritize Yamamoto this offseason and fill out depth and then kind of move up the chart. But hey, if this is how the dominoes are falling, where Yamamoto is next, you got to put all that on hold. And if this is their guy, you gotta go all out for him. If that, like you said, if that takes going to Japan to do it, go for it. If that takes circling back around and outbidding the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Giants, whoever else might be in the mix, you know, if you feel like it's going to be a win for the club, even with that type of investment, where you might be looking at $30 million a year, but this is a 26-year-old pitcher who has stuff that should play really, really well in the major leagues. You know, Steve Cohen knows all about risk management and risk mitigation. If you got, you know, the pockets that he does, you know, this is the type of risk that you kind of live for, right?
No, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the whole talk at the end of the last season and as we got into the offseason was, you know, how much is he going to make? A little kind of started off as maybe 200 mil to 250. Now, you know, last week we were talking about reaching up to $300 million. And now this was pre-Ohtani contract. So now that the whole Ohtani contract has been situated, could he get more than the 300 mil that's talking about? And that's just a contract. We're not even talking about the posting fee that has to be put in that as well.
I think probably... First episode back after our little hiatus, it's simply amazing. I was looking at like 8 years, 20, 24 million. I think that 30 million a year is probably going to stand up. If there's going to be competition for his services, we might see that increase. You might see the years go to 10, 300. Who knows? For a 25, 26-year-old pitcher, someone might go above and beyond. I mean, it's all going to come down to his market. And if you have some of these reported players in the market for Yamamoto, this could get really crazy. And this is, you know, I guess one of the times as Mets fans, we should be glad that Steve Cohen has all the capital and financial backing that he does. But it almost makes me nervous. Like, oh man, okay, let's say we get him. And let's say, you know, they put all this investment into him. You know, one, it's not our money, so we can't really get that worked up. But what if he's not that guy? And I'm not saying he won't be. I really think he will be. But, you know, these are the questions that the organization is undoubtedly asking themselves. It's got to be tough.
Yeah, it definitely does have to be tough, especially, you know, when you're giving up so much money to, you know, starting pitching, which, you know, there are injuries that happen and things can change. And so we were talking about the years and talking about all this money, and, you know, it could set back a team. you know, especially a team that, you know, maybe doesn't have the financial might that Cohen has, or now that the Dodgers have, and what the Yankees have, you know, getting a player like this and spending, outbidding other teams for one player, you know, and that player gets hurt, that sometimes is crippling to the franchise and sets them back even longer. But, you know, outside of what we saw with Ohtani, there really wasn't no bidding process. It always seemed like, even midway through last season when he was going to reach free agency, that the Dodgers were the team. It always felt like that. It felt like there was going to be no competition. Even with the Mets, it didn't really feel like that. We all thought that he wanted to stay out in the West and be on the West Coast, whether it was the Dodgers, Giants, Padres, before the whole thing with their deal or now that they are in debt. So it felt like the Padres could have been a team that was also in it. But with Yamamoto, there seems to be a whole lot of suitors. We talked about the Yankees. We talked about the Dodgers. The Red Sox seem to be in it. Obviously, the Giants. So many teams seem to be in now, the Blue Jays as well, who got were unable to get Ohtani's services. So, you know, are there any other teams that maybe we're not talking about that you think may be in on Yamamoto outside of the ones we've talked about just now?
Well, you're always gonna have teams that are willing to teams who you would dub as competitors or contenders, if they have the pockets to do so. I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if, let's say, maybe, you know, I'm not saying the Astros might have a chance, but the Astros, they always have a little bit of money to kick around if they need it. Let's say they get the itch to get on the Yamamoto tour. Let's say the Rangers get in there. You know, there are always going to be suitors looking for good starting pitching, just to echo what you just said. For a guy who's 26, who's 4 years younger than most free agents hitting their open market phase of their career, with the stuff that he has. You know, he's got a fastball that could touch high 90s. He's got a splitter that tunnels perfectly off of that fastball. And he's got a curveball, which you generally don't see a lot of in Japan, that looks like it's been around, you know, it looks like it's been playing in the majors for years. That's how well he places it. That's how well he disguises it. That's how well he you know, angular wise and tunnel wise, he matches it up with his fastball and it just falls off the table. It's he pitches almost like he's a veteran, but he's 26 years old. And I'm not even that concerned about his small stature. We've seen guys with small stature do well. I'm not worried about that. If he has the stuff to compete, he will. And you could look at the Cardinals, you could look at the Braves, you could look at the Cubs. Anyone with a little bit of money to spend who thinks that they can make a real push in the time that they're going to have Yamamoto, you have to almost assume that the conversation's been had internally. And if they want to be added to the Yamamoto tour list, most likely all they have to do is say the word. But I guess, you know, you got to have the bag of Rawlings to do it.
You know, we hear all these rumors and comments made about what, you know, Yamamoto's looking for, or what he wants out of this process, whether it's money, the legacy, what we hear about with some teams wearing the number 18, like the Yankee fans seem to think as well. In your heart of hearts, will Yamamoto be in Queens and sign with the Mets?
Yes. And you know why? I think that the trip to Japan set the Mets apart. I think the ability to outbid anyone that they want to sets them apart. I think the presence of Kodai Senga may set them, I don't know about apart, but at least put them in a different category than maybe other teams. I think the allure of pitching in New York could be a thing for him. I don't think he's got that, you know, Yankees itch that we saw like Masahiro Tanaka have when he came over, which is such a big deal when he came over, but he was only focused on the Yankees. I don't think that's going to be the case with Yamamoto. To say what you're saying about the number 18, I don't see a jersey number coming into play and stopping him from going anywhere. I do think the Mets, one, have I don't want to say an inside track, but a very good chance of bringing him in. They want him here. I think it's ultimately going to be up to the player. And yeah, just from what we've seen and the type of trajectory he's been on as a ball player, he always wants more. He always wants to achieve more. What's better than winning it all in New York? Yeah, you know what? Write it down on the wall. Yamamoto to New York for a bunch of money.
You know, I don't want to be a homer. I also think that Yamamoto is going to sign with the Mets, but I'll even go one step further. I don't think that the Yankees will be in top two. I think it's going to be between the Mets and the Dodgers. Both pitchers need a legitimate ace. The Yankees already have that in Gerrit Cole, which would move Yamamoto to second. Like you mentioned with Kodai Senga, I think that's huge. I think the fact that what Jeremy Hefner, and I give him a lot of slack for a lot of things over the years, but what Jeremy Hefner and that, I don't even know if they had the pitching lab then. I think it was just in the process of being created. But what the Mets were able to do with Kodai Senga in getting him, you know, primed by midseason to take the ball every fifth day and stay healthy and stay on top of his game. I mean, it felt like he got better and better after every start. That's got to be a selling point and something that the Mets had to have addressed with Yamamoto. If we bring you in here, we already have evidence that, you know, with Kodai Senga, who's a lot older than Yamamoto is, that our process will work and will make you a better pitcher by the end of the season. And on top of that, you're going to be the guy here. You know, if he was to win a World Series with the Yankees and to a certain extent, even with the Dodgers, I don't think he's going to be the guy, right? You know, they got Otani now, the Yankees got Soto, and the Yankees have the history that they have. But with the Mets, it's different. You know, obviously we don't have that allure and that history that every other team has or that the Dodgers and the Yankees have. But I think that's a big part, because not having that and having a guy like Yamamoto come in and win a championship, he will be held at one of the highest regards, because we all know the Mets are a pitching first team, and we've seen what they've done with the DeGrom and Dwight Gooden and Seaver. If he could deliver a title here, I mean, his character and his aura in Queens would go up tenfold.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, we've seen what World Series winners in Queens have done for players in New York. You know, look at the 69 Mets, look at the 86 Mets. These are, you know, as close to as sports legends as you can get in this town. You know, it doesn't happen very often. Like you said, the Yankees have this storied history and all these, you know, 20 whatever championships. You know, when you win with the Mets, it's almost a different legacy. It's like, wow, these guys are, you know, you got to remember the 69 Mets were doing ticker tape parades. I think they were sandwiched between astronauts getting ticker tape parades, like literally a couple of weeks apart. Like, you know, there's a certain, like you said, allure to winning in New York. Winning in Queens is, you know, and again, most of us wouldn't even know. I don't remember 86. I was 3 years old, but it almost feels like it would be different. And it almost feels like Yamamoto being involved in something like that would make it and of course Senga too, it would make it a global thing. And you know, one of these days, whenever Otani wins a World Series, you'll have that same kind of effect. But you can imagine it here, combining that global phenomena with a New York phenomena, with the quote-unquote little brother phenomena of the Mets. Man, that would be like the perfect storm of champagne and tears, and oh, it would be amazing. And I think that with the right selling point, you could get Yamamoto to buy into that. But yeah, ultimately, it's going to be up to the player. And if the Mets are going to throw all the money that they have, or all the expendable money that they have at somebody, I think it's got to be him, right?
Yeah, for sure. And we know how big of the Asian market that we have. We saw it when Otani came over. We see it with Senga and you know, how the fan base has really, you know, brought him in as one of their own. It's like Senga, I feel like, has to be one of the more popular, you know, Mets out there. You got the Ghost Fork. You always get the Sega sound when he comes out to pitch and strikes out a batter. So I really do think that the Mets, at the very least, will finish top two in trying to get Yamamoto. I think the Dodgers are right up there. And I don't think that the Yankees, you know, for all that it's worth, for all that we've, you know, the history and all that stuff, I do think that they fall behind both the Mets and the Dodgers. Let's go more into these comments. That's My Sports says, I have no problem getting Imanaga if we can't get Yamamoto. And we didn't get into this. What would be the plan B if the Mets don't get Yamamoto? Imanaga is one of those guys. And what are your thoughts on one Imanaga and how you would handle the plan B if, let's say, the Mets don't get Yamamoto?
Well, Imanaga, this is a guy who's like a strikeout master, a little bit older, probably around the same age as Senga. You don't see in the Korean League and the Japanese leagues, you don't see guys willing to strike out often. You'll see guys fight off two strike counts, you know, 8-9 pitches. It's actually really, really entertaining to watch. But guys like Imanaga, he's able to strike out hitters, just like the way Yamamoto is, just like the way Daisuke Matsuzaka was able to do, just like the way Nomo was able to do. They're getting guys who are just historically disciplined hitters to swing and miss. And if you can translate that to the major leagues, and of course, it's a different class of hitter, but if you can make it work, and if you can make guys miss at this level, you know, you got something. And with the stuff that you're able to do in these Japanese leagues, Korean leagues, you know, it, like I said, with guys who are just totally against striking out swinging, like it's the 1930s again here, it's almost incredible. And I'm looking forward to him coming over and being, you know, seeing if he can translate that style of pitching here and if guys are going to bite at it. If he's not in the mix for the Mets, and I think they have other options, if they want to go, you know, I know a lot of people have talked about Giolito, and you know, that's another guy. It's almost like a Severino where it's like, you know, what's the pitch lab going to do? Are you going to get the most out of him? I think we might see a few of those kind of options floated around, whether it's him, whether it's, you know, I think Montgomery had a really, really nice run with Texas and even before that. And, you know, if the Mets want to get involved in a guy like Montgomery, absolutely a great option to fall back on. But Yamamoto probably should be that guy. I wouldn't be surprised if they see a Michael Lorenzen in the mix, just as like a middle rotation guy. Michael Wacha, who has really, I know he had a very brief run with the Mets during their dark ages a few years ago, but he's been kind of lights out since. So I wouldn't be shocked. Me and Taryn talked about it on our show. If Jack Flaherty is healthy and he's taking a flyer on a prove-it deal, on a one-year deal, I wouldn't be shocked to see Hefner get his claws in there and see what they can do with a guy like Jack Flaherty. But, you know, after the Yamamotos of the world, it falls off considerably. You know, they can make it work without a Yamamoto just by filling in depth pieces. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this cookie kind of crumbles.
Joe DiMeo of the Mets pod and SNY had a post saying if the Mets didn't get Yamamoto, he would steer away from giving a lot of money to the Montgomerys and the Blake Snells. And I know this comment here, I don't want anything to do with Snell. I kind of agree with that because I know he's going to be.
I'm with this guy. I'm with Savanos here.
Yeah, I we're both with him. I would not be giving him anywhere near, you know, what Yamamoto's getting. Obviously he's not going to get that, but I mean like anywhere close to that, because he's going to be wanting a lot of money. He won the Cy Young. I don't know. I just am not buying into Snell. And I know that.
I'm sorry. Have you ever seen a less respected Cy Young winner?
Yeah, no.
Like R.A. Dickey,
Rick Porcello was also a Met.
That's a good one. Yeah. Where's my bell? I have a bell around here. I that would have got the bell. That was a good one.
But yeah, these guys that, you know, maybe even Jordan Montgomery falls. And I like Jordan Montgomery. He's a guy that I would go after. But to give these guys, you know, 5-6 year deals north of over 120, 150 may not be the wisest move for the Mets. Those are kind of like trap deals that we would fall into normally. And Joe DiMeo was saying maybe they should go after these 1 year, like you said, prove it deals. And, you know, I mentioned Jack Flaherty and we mentioned Giolito and even Seth Lugo, bringing Seth Lugo back. And those were kind of the names he was like, maybe they should go after those 1 or 2, 3 year, 1 or 2 year type deals and bring those guys in for a short term. So we may see something like that happen if they don't get Yamamoto, but all hopes are that they will. I will do what Carlos Ramos says. We will sign Yamamoto. Yes, we will. He will be ours. I want to 100% agree with that. Let's switch over to, you know, some hitting. Mets and Pete Alonso have not had contract extensions yet. That came out from Tim Healy of Newsday recently. And we can all assume that right now the 100% focus is Yamamoto, right? I mean, like, that is the focus. Nothing else matters right now because we've seen a lot of these minor signings, but nothing to really add to the major league roster as in, you know, another starting pitcher outside of Luis Severino, but we really haven't seen much action. We know Otani and Yamamoto have been holding things up, but the Mets are just 100% focused, I think, on Yamamoto. And
yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with you. Yeah, at this point, with the way the dominoes are falling league-wide, yeah, I think all their attention's focused and turned to him.
Stern said that they will eventually meet, but they want to do things behind closed doors. And that's been the Mets, you know, MO for ever since Steve Cohen has taken over as the owner. Everything has been mostly quiet. Any of these signings we see kind of like just come out of the blue ever so often. You saw with Scherzer. We saw with the trade of Lindor and the signing of Lindor. So Scott Boras, he's ready to talk. He says that they're open for business with contract extension talks. And do you see any progress in an extension being met this offseason? I know we talked a little bit about it at the State of the Mets panel, but I wanted you to, you know, kind of expand on that.
I do. I actually do think they get it done before Pete hits free agency. I would love to say they get it done this winter, and I'll hesitantly hang my hat on that. Sure. We've seen Scott Boras get hired specifically by clients who are looking to get their extensions done before they hit free agency. One of the people I pointed out specifically was Xander Bogaerts, not the San Diego Padres deal, the Red Sox deal a few years back. He, like, specifically went out of his way to get Boras and get him locked up in Boston. And he got a great deal for it. With the deals that we've seen him and the Mets get done in recent years, whether it was Verlander, Scherzer, Nimmo, whatever, you know, there's a good relationship there. I think Pete's made it very known that he wants to be in New York. We saw the t-shirt floating around recently. New York or nothing. Was that right?
I think it was New York or nowhere.
New York or nowhere. My apologies. So, you know, clearly there's mutual interest. Clearly the fan base would be heartbroken if they let him walk away. You have alumni reaching out. I think Daryl Strawberry did an op-ed or something. He's like, you got to let him stay. Yeah, I agree. You have to keep him around. And, you know, Pete's got his flaws. There's no debating that. When Pete's fully clicking, which will happen, like, it's almost like a cycle with Pete. He'll figure it all out. The league gets a book on him. They'll attack him differently. Then he's got to adjust. And this will happen to Pete every 6 weeks or so. He'll be on a tear, and he'll figure it out. And he'll start hitting that breaking ball that's coming on the outside, and he's going to send it the other way. He's a very intelligent hitter with power to boot. But again, pitchers will make him their main focus. We're not going to let Pete Alonso beat us, and they're going to figure out a way to beat him, and then he has to adjust. It's baseball, baby. We love that. But what the Mets or anybody who's going to try and sign him, what they're going to try and do is say, oh, well, you got flaws. You look at Aaron Judge, he hits 330 with 50 home runs. You're not doing that. And yeah, he's not doing that. And that's okay. But, you know, if the Mets are going to entertain an extension for Pete, surely you're going to be looking somewhere in the ballpark of Matt Olson, which was 8170-ish, 8168 or something. You know, that's a big commitment for a guy who's going to be into his late 20s soon. You know, a power hitter, a slugger. He's a little round on the edges, and that's probably not going to change with age. Like, you know, you might be looking at a 5-year, high 20s a year. And maybe that's a common ground you can come to with Pete, but it's going to be a really unique contract for him just because he's such a unique player. He can give you 40, 50 home runs a year, but he might hit 230, he might hit 270. He might look atrocious for a couple of months, but he's still Pete. So it's going to be really, really unique. And I think that's why he got Scott Boras in the mix, is because if anybody's going to know how to navigate this situation, it's going to be him. And if Pete says, this is where I want to be, just get me the best deal you can. I think this is the guy who checks all the boxes. So, yeah, I'm confident they're going to get it done. And, yeah, I'd like to say they get it done this offseason. I think that's on their priority list. I think this is the type of thing that would rejuvenate the fan base and keep that buzz moving like we were talking about before.
Yeah, I always thought that the two big moves coming into this offseason would be one, to sign Yamamoto, and two, to give the extension to Pete Alonso. And I'm still on board with that coming to fruition. You know, it was smart for Pete to bring in Boras, especially, you know, you look at where Pete ranks within these first basemen. Obviously, Freeman, top of the heap, Matt Olson, right up there. Those two guys are signed. P- Pete's the guy right now in this offseason. If you're in the need of a first baseman, if you're in the need of a power hitter, and he can supply, you know, pretty good to decent defense, you know, when called upon.
Average.
So he is going to get you. He's going to get a lot of money just because of those parameters, just because of how everything works out. And he's going to probably be the, you know, if Soto goes to free agency, which I think he will, especially after what we saw with Otani, he's definitely got to be going through his mind to go to free agency. So he'll be a top two, you know, hitter on the market. He's going to get a lot of money, and Boris is great at squeezing, you know, squeezing teams for that money to get, you know, to his players. And I think it's going to work. It was the right move. I've never been a fan of Scott Boras, but I know what he does for his players. And it was definitely the right move for Pete to jump on board. And I think that Brandon Nimmo did the same thing the previous season, where he, you know, jumped on with Scott Boras right before he was getting set and ready for free agency. He hits the market and he ends up coming back to the Mets. So hopefully the same thing happens with Pete. So just to, you know, clarify this whole thing, you think Pete gets the contract extensions talks this offseason and they get done this offseason?
I do. I think that nobody wants the distraction. I think that Pete wants to be here. I think that the Mets want him here. I think the Mets are going to have to pay a premium to not let him get to free agency. And I think Boris is salivating at that.
Let's get to some more of these comments. Ibby saying, Alonzo discourse, everyone starts screaming. That's the requirement. We've seen a lot of it. Carlos Ramos is on the Tim train, man. Tim for president. How about that?
Love it.
Let's get it. Loving Life Maureen here saying, great show tonight, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for everyone tuning in, being a part of the chat with me, with my good friend Tim Ryder here. And we really appreciate you coming out and joining the chat. Once again, I'm here with Tim Ryder, host of the Simply Amazing podcast and creator and writer for The Apple on Substack. You can follow Tim on X at Timothy R. Ryder. Let's continue on with extension talk, because Francisco Alvarez wants an extension. Tim Healy of Newsday reported that the catcher is open to contract extensions. We look at his season last year coming up, 2023 stats, 209 batting average. Wasn't great in that part. If you're a big on batting average, 25 home runs, 63 RBIs, a 721 OPS. In the perfect world, he would kind of be the bat you want to protect Pete Alonso, but I mean, he's definitely has a lot to work on, a lot to improve on, up and down season. But, you know, he showed a lot of promise and really improved defensively, especially with his pitch framing. We can agree that this is not the off season that we are going to see this, right?
An Alvarez extension.
Yeah,
I would assume it's probably down the priority list. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Mets revisit this, especially if he kind of doesn't miss a beat going into his sophomore season. We saw the potential. I think we see the ceiling that Alvarez has and the work that, one, he's already put in into becoming a major leaguer. Two, I mean, we've seen clips of him all offseason putting in all types of different work, whether it's weight room, whether it's catcher training, defense training, quickness, agility drills, whatever. He's making every effort to just be the best major leaguer he can be. If he continues on this trajectory, and especially if he can translate his offseason work and everything he's kind of done to learn his craft, in addition to just learning, you know, major league pitching from a hitter's standpoint, if he can put it all together and continue on that upwards incline next year, I wouldn't be shocked if they'll go ahead and revisit this midseason. We've seen this happen before. Team is that impressed with the player, you know what? Yeah, you're getting the extension now. I think young kid from Tampa Bay who got it a couple of years ago.
We see it a lot with the Braves. They do with their own players.
With the Braves. Look at Milwaukee. They have Churio, who's not even in the majors yet. They're like, yo, we love what you're doing. Sign him up. And I'm sure that, you know, him and his representation are putting this into the world under the same ideas. And that's fine. I think Alvarez could be that echelon of player where it's like, oh, wow, Mets better lock him up now. You don't see, you know, catchers who can field the position and hit the way he does at that age with that passion for the game. And yeah, if he wants to talk about it, if I'm the Mets, let's discuss it. But keep on showing me that you're the person we think you are. You're the player we think you are. And, you know, I would say that very, very near future, that discussion is going to be a reality.
Yeah, I would think maybe, you know, within the next 2 to 3 years, we might see something like this take place. You know, the Mets aren't a team that in the past would really jump into something like this. The last time I could ever see this happening, I think they did it with Juan Lagares. That was going that back far. I think Juan Lagares maybe was 2013-ish. 2013, yeah, 2014.
He broke his toe on opening day, right?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously different regime, different ownership, a different front office now with David Stearns. I don't know if David Stearns has done anything like this in Milwaukee in his time. I tend to go back and see, has he done something like this that would make me believe that maybe he would do this with Alvarez, but maybe, you know, that he has more money working with Cohen. Maybe this is something that we might see the Mets start doing with their players, because they really missed the boat on doing this with Pete Alonso, because now Pete Alonso is going to cost a buttload of money. I want to go back to what Carlos Ortiz says, because this is another part of the baby Mets here. And the other night, Ronnie Mauricio, who was playing very well, I think he was like 4-for-4 in the winter league. He got hurt trying to, you know, steal second. I initially thought that he might have sprained his ankle. It looked like he twisted his ankle and sprained it. A lot of people think it's his knee. Did you see the play, Tim, at all?
I did. It was just a very grainy Twitter clip. It looked like it could have been a significant-ish injury. I believe he's going back to New York. MRI will give us the full story on that. I'm not one for much speculation, but, you know.
He did walk off on his own power, so take that with what you will.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's important.
Yeah, no, I want to certainly optimistic, you know. I think if he was in a substantial amount of pain, it would have been, you know, we would have noticed. But it certainly didn't look good the way that he went down. The fact that he's coming back to New York for an MRI probably isn't promising. I'm not going to, oh my goodness, you know, he's going to be out for the year. I'm not putting my eggs in that basket just yet. But that might be the end of his winter league season, even if this is just minor. If he's going to be a big part of the Mets in 2023, I'd prefer seeing him get healthy and getting a nice full off season and coming to spring training 100%. You know, if he's good to go, though, yeah, get back out there, man. Come to spring training fresh. But if there's something you got to work through injury wise, yeah, go ahead and work through it. And, you know, he'll have more time to play Dominican winter ball.
When I look at the infield alignment and how I wanted these players to be situated, because we know that the Mets are not going outside for third base. They're going to stay in-house for that. We know that Stearns talked about McNeil getting more playing time at second base. I actually wanted to see more of Mauricio at second base. I thought he played a lot better second base than he did at third base. But, you know, with Mauricio, Beatty, obviously they have Vientos there. And, you know, Joey Wendell will play all around the infield. Come opening day, who is it that you want to see play third base for the Mets?
Third base, I would slot Ronnie in over Beatty. Just because I like, you know, I think his bat, at least right now and even into the future, will probably play a little more powerful than Beatty's. I think Beatty's hit tool is terrific. I think he's going to be a fine major leaguer. And also Ronnie's athleticism and his arm. He's got a cannon for an arm at third base. And I'd love to see him develop into a good third baseman. I think, like you just said, you saw his comfort level in the middle infield, you know, coming from short, moving over to second. He was kind of able to translate that really, really well. I think it's only a matter of time before he gets comfortable at third if he's not getting there already. I believe he had 5 straight errorless games playing third in the winter league before he got hurt. So I see, you know, to the stars for Ronnie Mauricio. I think that he has that type of potential. Might be biased. I've been a big fan of Ronnie since he was like 17 years old. I think he is that player who can continue to keep on, you know, whether it's him setting his own goals or whether it's the team or the fan base saying, I don't think he could do this. I think he's going to keep on doing that. I think he's, you know, he's on base is going to be an issue. Yeah, give him a year versus major league pitching. He's going to realize I can hit a ball that's 8 inches out of the zone 400 feet. But do I have to? Is this going to be good for me in the long run? That only comes with experience. And until he's facing competition that won't let him get away with, yeah, he might hit a couple of dingers that are well outside of the strike zone. He's not going to do that every time. That's the only way he's going to learn. But I think he has the potential to learn and become the player that everyone kind of thinks he can be. Some stronger than others, of course. But yeah, I give Mauricio all the opportunities I can if I'm the Mets. I think he has a future that's kind of unlike anybody else's in that cold baby Mets class. I mean, you could put him with Alvarez, but comparing a third base, a catcher to anybody is just apples and oranges. Yeah.
Well, like you said, outside of Alvarez, let's leave, you know, Alvarez, you know, out of the, you know, the talk. But Mauricio seems to have the most potential of the other three. You include Beatty, you include Vientos in that. We thought Beatty would be that guy, and it just hasn't, you know, worked out for him. He's also hasn't had the chance to play a full season. Yeah. I think that the unfortunate thing for him was right out of spring training, his bat was alive and they decided, you know, we're going to do Eduardo Escobar at third. And when the time comes, if it comes, we'll bring up Beatty and we'll let, you know, Beatty cook in AAA. And I thought maybe to his detriment that, you know, took a toll on him. And, you know, he got brought up, got sent back down, and it was just a whole mess for him. But you like Mauricio at third. I was kind of more of a Mauricio at second. I like the way he worked well with Lindor, and you know, Lindor on either side is a huge leader, and will definitely man the infield the way that he does and the way that we love to see him do that out there. And I hope that Mauricio takes those next steps. We saw it starting last year in winter ball. We keep seeing the progression year, and we hope to continue to see that. I don't know, you know, what happens with, you know, a Beatty and a Vientos, whether, you know, it's trade and whether it's moves to the outfield or be part-time DHs. But the Mets have a huge decision. At the very least, I wanted them to make a decision on whether they were going to go with the kids and at third base this season, or if they were going to, you know, bring in a stopgap or someone to play while these kids, you know, try to get better at AAA. But it seems like they're going to go with the kids, and I'm happy to see it, especially in a year that the expectations are low. So, you know, we'll see what happens with them. One more thing I want to get into with you, and actually before that, Ibby goes, Tim wants those Mauricio cards going up, baby. Get those cards up. Get those cards. Skyrocket those
Ronnie stocks, baby. Give me those Ronnie stocks. No, hey, though, those have been in the collection for a while. That's been a roller coaster of Ronnie, Ibby, up and down. But no, in it for the long haul. I got some good stuff. I'll do a little Ronnie card show one day.
Yeah, we got to see some of the Ryder cards come out soon.
Oh my gosh, I got a it's like an image variation of his like first Bowman.
Wow.
It's cool. He's got these like dyed blonde in the middle. Oh, it's an awesome, awesome photo. Yeah, I'll have to put that up on Twitter.
They just come out with some really nice looking cards every year. And
it hits you right in the nostalgia, bro. If you're of a certain age, it's like, oh man, it's like you're a kid again. It's so fun.
Awesome. Always awesome stuff. And always awesome to see you, you know, you post them every year. And even not of the Mets, other players as well. So it's, you know, are you still doing that account? Was it Ryder Cards?
Ryder Cards. Yeah, I still have it going. Not as often. Social media has become a bit of a dumpster fire lately, so it's kind of intermittent for me, even on the main account. But yeah, I still do my cards. I still have an eBay page, and I guess kind of like of a, I guess in a lull, you could say, but that's off season every year. It's like this.
Once the season hits up, more prospects come up. The kid from Milwaukee that signed the extension, once he comes up, I'm pretty sure you got your Corbin Carroll stock as well.
Oh yeah, we got Carroll. We got Centurio here. I got a bunch of Orioles. I've been collecting these Orioles kids for a while. I got a lot of Adley. I got a bunch of Cedric Mullins, who, you know, I don't want to say undersung because he's an all-star. He's a 30-30 guy. That is the glue to that Baltimore team in my mind. And I'm not sure he gets all the credit he deserves, but I'm a big Cedric Mullins fan.
No, Cedric Mullins was a guy that I got on my fantasy team, helped me lead in the top of the division for a long time, and really good player, really solid. Tim, plug your Twitter handles for Simply Amazing and the Apple.
Sure. Simply Amazing is just Simply Amazing Pod. There's no G at the end of Amazing, just Simply Amazing Pod. The Apple is our Substack page. Twitter is The Apple NYM, The Apple New York Mets, but The Apple NYM. The website is also theapplenym.substack.com. You can find Simply Amazing anywhere you get podcasts, Apple Pods, Spotify. We are not on YouTube currently, but it is in the works. We're going to make that happen soon.
Before we wrap up here, the Mets made some minor, you know, off-season moves last week. They brought in Michael Tolkien, possible swingman, long reliever. Jorge Lopez, who... you know, a reliever as well. Jose Iglesias, which I think we mentioned a little bit earlier on, to add to the infield depth along with Joey Wendell. Taylor Cowley, I don't know too much about him. There's a lot of depth moves here. Do you see any of these signing making an impact on the 2024 Mets? One that I'm looking at, obviously, Jorge Lopez. I know he hasn't had the greatest career. He had, you know, one really good season, but he's reuniting with the newly hired bullpen coach, Jose Rosado. They worked together for Team Puerto Rico in the WBC, which he pitched very well in. So I'm going to be keeping my eye on Jorge Lopez, especially for middle relief, and maybe, you know, him reuniting with Edwin Diaz. They both were on Team Puerto Rico. Maybe that's, you know, maybe that's something that he can look to. He could look to Edwin Diaz to mentor him, you know, to get him used to being in New York, pitching in New York, and being a part of this bullpen. So he's the one I'm looking at. Are you also looking at Jorge Lopez? Is there someone else that you saw that the Mets signed, one of these minor signings that you think will have impact in 2024?
I think Tonkin is going to be a little more valuable than people are expecting. I think he's going to be fine to be like a sixth inning guy. You know, if you need him in the seventh inning. Look, if he worked in the seventh inning for the Braves, he was probably going to work in the seventh for the Mets. So, you know, whatever works there. I think Lopez might be one of the Mets' best additions, or might turn out to be one of the Mets' best additions this offseason. I was following him pretty closely in 2022. I was hoping that if the Orioles were going to be sellers, that he would be attached to something. I said it on the pod this morning. I believe when Mancini was getting shopped around a couple of years ago, I put it on Twitter. I said, boy, I'd love for Lopez to be attached. When his changeup is working, when his slider is working, it accentuates his fastball to the point that it makes it, I don't want to say unhittable, but unpredictable. And if he can get back to that, especially, you know, I think even in all walks of life, a new set of eyes could really change everything for anybody in any situation. For a guy like Lopez or anyone in that kind of scenario where you have that much talent, I think putting him in the right situation, he could really be. I explained Brooks Raley as almost like a 2A to Edwin Diaz's 1, and we needed a 2B. I think Jorge Lopez could be a 2B, theoretically. I'm not sure if he's going to be Adam Ottavino. I saw someone ask that question openly. Like, could Lopez be Adam Ottavino for this team? In a sense, yes. I think Lopez could be Lopez. I think he could be a force.
He was wasn't he a closer in his first run with the Baltimore Orioles?
I want to say a setup, like an eighth inning guy, and he was leading up to not the guy they have now, but the other. I'll pull it up right now. They have a really nice back end of their.
Yeah, they do. They do. Yeah, I thought in his first run with Baltimore that he at least at some point he must have closed out. Portion of games
sure he got some, yeah
but you know, seeing him in that bullpen, obviously bullpens are a dime a dozen. You get the Jekyll and Hyde effect with these guys every year, and you know, who knows, maybe this is a time for Jorge Lopez to, you know, step it up. We know that Adam Ottavino had a hard time with holding guys on, and that became a big problem. Especially last year with the new rules that hurt him. And you know what? He didn't have he didn't have a terrible season. If you look at the stats, you know, having a 3 ERA in that bullpen that we had last year seems to be pretty good. It's just that in some of these big games that the Mets needed, that's when he, you know, he blew up. So, you know, Adam Ottavino is on the outs now. You got Jorge Lopez in, and I'm sure that the Mets will get some major league talent in there in the bullpen as well. Absolutely. Some legit guys, whether it's a David Robertson that they go after or Jordan Hicks. I'm sure that there will be some guys that the Mets bring in here that will not be, you know, reclamation projects or, you know, trials. So we'll see where they go with that. But to see him with the bullpen coach from Puerto Rico with Edwin Diaz, I think it's going to work out pretty well. And I hope it does. I hope he's able to turn his career back around.
Oh, likewise. And I think that, you know, if the Mets really want to go upper level, they have options in kind of every level for their bullpen, but they're going to have to, like you said, they're going to have to, and starting rotation and bullpen, starting, you know, pitching staff, they're going to have to make upgrades before spring training across the board. Peterson's not going to be ready until midseason. Lucchese and McGill are probably not your 4 and 5 as they're penciled in right now. You're going to make additions everywhere. I mean, you can go to a Liam Hendricks if he's looking to come to New York. You can look to a David Robertson if he's looking to come back to New York. I think that would, I agree with you, that would be a really nice move. I think he expressed a little interest in revisiting that.
Yeah, I don't think he wanted to leave. I don't think he wanted to be traded in the first place. And it showed in his first month with Miami.
Yeah, I mean, I think who's out there? Michael Fulmer's out there. You know, there's guys who, you know, they're not going to blow your socks off like much of a wow factor, but there's guys out there who can certainly be pieced together and form a nice bullpen. And, you know, the Mets have all these resources and all these new eyes on their projects, and you just got to hope they put it all together. But there are options. If they want to go in a let's pick some guys to do some things sort of route, they certainly have the options to do that, whether it's free agency, whether it's trade. You know, they have decisions to make. I'm not counting them out of this offseason. They got a lot of work to do. You got to keep up with the Braves and the Phillies. Who knows if they could do that this offseason, but you have to at least keep pace. You can't fall too far behind because you got the Marlins nipping at your heels, and they're a very, very much up-and-coming franchise themselves.
Yeah, Carlos is in agreement with us. He would also bring back David Robertson. Look, there hasn't been much movement this offseason except for what? Aaron Nola returning to Philly. You had Otani go to LA. You had Soto get traded to the Yankees. But, you know, I see a lot of frustration out there. And like I said, you know, Met fans can be frustrated if you want. I am not going to hold it to you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I always try to say anytime someone brings a, you know, one of these tweets up to me or posts or whatever you want to call them now on X, you know, who was the guy that signed that you wanted? And there really hasn't been one. For me, it was Eduardo Rodriguez. He was one of the guys that I wanted for the rotation. Outside of that, no one has signed that I wanted. Everyone's still up for grabs. And I'm being realistic because, you know, Otani, I thought, was not going to happen. But Yamamoto, there's still a chance. And I want Yamamoto.
I think the odds makers still have the Mets up towards the, they had them up towards the top of that list. And I would say they're probably still top two, top three at this moment.
Yeah, hopefully that situation, you know, fixes itself and the Mets can get their guy. That's who they want. And I hope it goes the way the Mets want it, because, you know, seeing a lot of the fans frustrated, seeing, like I mentioned during the panel, the PTSD of, you know, it's not going to work out our way. I just like for this one time for the Mets to get, you know, the guy that they wanted, the guy that they pursuing, the guy that they traveled 14 hours to go see, and visit and show that they really want him. We all want to see Yamamoto on opening day in the blue and orange at Citi Field against Milwaukee, because I think that's the first series of the year against the Brewers, if I am correct. They start off at home. Nice. But like Carlos Ortiz says, once Yamamoto signs, all others will fall, and hopefully that will be the case. That's going to wrap it up here for the Subway to Shea podcast. Tim, it's always a pleasure having you on. I really appreciate it. Let everyone know what you're working on.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we got the pod coming out weekly. I've been working on a deep dive on what this roster might look like by opening day. And it's just a jumbled pad of pencil and eraser marks at this point. But yeah, I got some good written content. Should be out by the end of the week. Check out the Apple. Sign up. It's always free. Never any paywalls.
Well, Tim, you can follow Tim on X at Tim R. Ryder. Make sure to subscribe to Simply Amazing on Apple Podcasts and the Apple Substack. Tim Ryder, ladies and gentlemen, you get the clap, my friend. Always great seeing you. Ibby, one last comment. It better be packed with stars, Tim. Otherwise, not good enough.
$1 million payroll, Ibby. I promise.
And we'll leave it on that note. You can follow Subway to Shay on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Subway to Shay. Listen, subscribe to the Subway to Shay podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Turn on your notifications to never miss an episode of Subway to Shay. You can rate the show. You could leave comments for the show for me to review, whether you like it, whether you don't like it. I want to know it all. Let me know what you're thinking. This episode will be out on audio form tomorrow, so please be on the lookout for that. Obviously, Subway to Shay is on YouTube. You've been watching it now. Make sure you're subscribing. Make sure you like the video get all the notifications from my channel. There will be clips from this show that will be posted. You'll see some shorts up there as well. We're doing it all for you Mets fans out there. And you can leave comments as well as a huge thumbs up. That would really appreciate it. Don't forget to follow my work for Rising Apple. Rising Apple's New York Mets site on the Fan Side and Network. You can read my articles by going to risingapple.com. Make sure to follow Rising Apple on Twitter at Rising Apple Blog and the Fan Side and Network at Fan Sided. Tim, this was a lot of fun. Matt Ibby saying, love it, boys. Great stuff. Carlos Ortiz saying, thank you, guys. And thank you all. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you all for being here with me and Tim and for joining in the chat, joining in the conversation. I love the interaction. And you guys help my podcast grow each and every week. And I can't thank you enough. For Anthony Rivera, for Tim Ryder, this has been the Subway to Shay podcast. And as always, let's go Mets.